You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Raise Your Voice as part of the Fans First Sports Network. I'm Brett Rutherford, joined by Darby Robinson for another episode. Darby, it's been a while. We've taken a few weeks off, but we're back. And boy, do we have some news. Tell us what's going on with Wander Franco.
So we the last time we podded, we were dissecting a Mark Topkin article. And we mentioned, I stand by everything we said in that podcast, by the way.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not taking anything back.
Not a single thing is taken back. But we did say that, like, you don't do this week of an article with nothing on it, with nothing on record, with nothing there. If there wasn't maybe some stuff on background where somebody's like, don't even quote me as an anonymous Rays player, like, but
or front office member guy, or member of the coaching
staff. Yeah, because he had none of those things. He didn't even have anonymous. He had none of that. He just said rumbling. So I don't think it was a good piece to write at the time. I did say that once there is something, then you can use there have been rumblings for weeks or whatever. So I think now that Wander Franco very publicly had some, we could sort of see in the dugout a little bit. On, I believe it was the Wednesday game, he was very upset and like kind of slamming his bat around. And basically, we don't know exactly what the incident was, but on Thursday, Wander Franco is not in the lineup card. Kevin Cash announces that he has basically been benched for two games. He was sent away from the team on Thursday. He was back on Friday, but not in the game. So benched for two games for mostly seemingly being a bad teammate, kind of not necessarily huge things, but like not handling failures properly. And kind of seemingly the sense is being kind of just a jerk when he fails around other people. So kind of needing to get that maturity up, and baseball is a game of failure. So when you fail, don't make other people miserable and this like kind of dark cloud around you. Now we know that from that article from last week from Topkin, or 2 weeks ago, that there must have been some, you know, annoyances on background, but on deep background. Yeah. I think this whole situation, while probably the most public thing the Rays have done in years, right? Maybe since the BJ Upton, Evan Longoria blow up. The Rays have a especially in under the Stu Sternberg, kind of that era of ownership and that front office, nothing leaks and nothing really gets out unless they want it to, and nothing really kind of escapes the void of the clubhouse. So this being, you know, a very public statement of saying, you know, Wander's getting discipline and we love the guy. He's our future, but you know, there are some things he needs to mature on. So it was a big thing. Like how did you take the news? I mean, it was obviously like, you know, national news, like national baseball news. The leading wins above replacement player in all of baseball got benched for two games. Like that's huge.
We talk about dealing with failure, right? And he's having maybe the best season in the American League other than Shohei Ohtani in terms of value. And it was another story that, like the Rays, we talk about how neglected they are in the eyes of the national media. But, you know, I was sitting, and watching Pardon the Interruption and some other ESPN programming around the horn, and Franco was discussed on all of those. He was in the rundown. It wasn't the Rays in general. It was Wander Franco. And he is the Rays' biggest star since Evan Longoria. And there was a time, you know, the late 2000s, early 2010s, where Evan Longoria was one of the biggest stars in the game. And so the Rays just haven't dealt with that in over 10 years, that level of stardom. So it was shocking because they dealt with it, not dealt with it proactively, but they addressed it before the game. Cash and Joe Maddon before him has never really shied away from benching players. If there was a need to bench a player for dogging out a ground ball or, you know, mistakes. I want to say Wander in his rookie season was either pulled from a game or like didn't play the day after he dogged a ground ball. But then we've gone back and forth with Wander about should he run out ground balls? Should he not run out ground balls? But for Kevin Cash to make a statement before the game was shocking to me. It was something where maybe he was left out of the lineup, you know, maybe Topkin, you know, asks around what's going on. Is it a day off? Doesn't feel like a day off. And then after the game, Cash is asked about it. And, you know, maybe he says something, you know, we're going to give Wander a couple days to get his head right or to, you know, whatever they're going to say, where it's like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. He's getting benched, but we're not going to make a statement about it. Mm-hmm. But he did. And I was shocked. Not only to say like, you're going to bench your best player, but for saying for him being a bad teammate, like that is crazy news. And in Wander, like, there's been discussions about, you know, the way he carries himself, and obviously we talked a lot about that in the last pod. I had never seen examples of him being a bad teammate, but there's obviously a lot that we don't see. I've never seen him not hustle when the game calls for it, right? Again, not talking about ground balls, but last year I thought he played too hard. Like, I'm like, this guy's never gonna last at shortstop. He's just gonna run himself.
His hamstrings are gonna explode.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this was, I think, eye-opening for a lot of fans. Hopefully, I'm not worried about the benching itself, but where we go from here. Right, this guy's signed to a massive extension, the biggest contract in franchise history. He's supposed to be back in the lineup today. He was back in the dugout yesterday. He stayed home on Thursday, or was maybe asked to stay home. And now it's like, where do we go from here? Is it going to be business as usual? Is Wander going to talk to the media today and have some things to say that the front office won't be happy about? I don't know. I hope so. I hope everything is fine. And that's, I think, what we can all hope for, is that it's a teaching moment for Wander. He learns from it. He's young, and he can continue, like you said, contending for the American League MVP this season.
I think there's probably no better team in all of baseball that I trust more to handle a situation like this, a delicate disciplinary issue. More than this group of Rays coaches and managers. Mm-hmm. Like, I do think very strongly that this is one of, if not the highest emotional intelligence group all together of coaches and managers. They're not just X's and O's or spreadsheets. They are very holistic in their coaching. They are very mentorship in their coaching. There was a fantastic video that the Rays media team put out over the offseason showcasing Kyle Snyder and how all of the pitchers, I mean, he is working with them throughout the year and also just checking in on them, just like texting them and saying, you know, just seeing how they are doing as a human, not how's their workout regimen, what's their velo, what's the, you know, it's like, you know,
how are you doing? Fly out to go visit guys in the offseason is what I've heard.
Yeah. I mean, the Rays clearly put a lot of emphasis on that part of the game, the emotional human element of the game, which is, I know, ironic for a lot of fans because they see them as this cold machine that that just, it's an algorithm that just pumps out players and spits them out when they're injured. But like, they, this is a team that focuses more on the human element and the emotions behind it and getting good teammates around them than almost anybody. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why this got there is that this is a team that Eric Neander has cultivated as not having necessarily a bunch of kind of freelance guys. Like, this guy's good, but he's a complete asshole. It's been, I think character issues have been like a big thing.
You'll be traded.
And you'll be traded. I mean, I think that's the thing is there was a lot of talks. That's why Rich Hill was like kind of having a really good year with the Rays and then gets traded. I mean, for a nice little prospect, but like just kind of a very odd timing, but we see Rich Hill. He's a massive grump like constantly. So like, maybe they're like, you know what? We don't want this old grump around, harshing the vibes of the young guys. Like, so I think that's for better or worse, this team focuses on like the head and the heart a ton. And I think that is a really good way of coaching because you have to have that to have you buy in to some of the wacky strategies. But it also, if it's a long, long season, you are with these guys, you have so few off days, you are barely seeing your families. You're like 6 months of pretty much go, go, go with all of these people. And you're gonna get annoyed with people. So I think making sure you keep that emotional intelligence high is a way to, that is an advantage in baseball. So I do think this coaching staff, Kevin Cash, Kyle Snyder, they have Justin Suha as another mental health kind of professional there, kind of that emotional skills. Rodney Linares, who's also from the Dominican Republic. And
coach Wander in the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, and has a lot of respect from a lot of those DR players. I like, this is a team that absolutely of coaches, I think, that has a good support system, has a good base that I do think amongst all other teams that could handle a situation as delicate as your 22-year-old superstar is playing great on the field, but maybe is taking the dips poorly, and that's affecting him sometimes on the field, but also in the clubhouse, having to be like, we're not going to, this isn't a, again, it's still not to the level of Tatis or Ja Morant when you have a superstar who is creating both legal and massive issues to you, and you're just like having to deal with him being like him really letting you down. I think the idea is you don't want to get it to that level. And so this is the Rays trying to say, we do not want it to get to the level where this guy is above the rest of the team, so he can do anything he wants, but also saying that, like, you know, we are here for you, Wander, for, you know, 10, you know, he's going to be in his 30s by the time he leaves. That's a huge amount of his life is going to be here. So I think the idea is they want to make him into the best player, but also best person they can. And I think that's an admirable effort. And I do trust this coaching staff and manager staff to be able to help kind of thread that needle. And I think it can be helpful that you're not just saying, like, you know, the production's been great, right? Why even mess with that? He's playing great. It's, I think, because they see this as not just a 1 year thing or a 2 month thing, but like, let's make sure that this, we kind of set these expectations, help Wander realize like his actions, especially his actions, have bigger consequences for the rest of the team, because he is the best player. He is the star. Whether he's the vocal or emotional leader, he is the star player. So that does ripple. So I trust this coaching staff. If we didn't have the coaching staff, if the Rays had, you know, Aaron Boone as the manager, I wouldn't trust this situation. If there was John Schneider behind, I wouldn't trust this situation, but it is not. Yeah, Ollie Marmol, or God, anybody. Like, there's so many. Last week, Tony also mentioned Tony La Russa. Well, he'd be asleep. He wouldn't even notice. We'd have to wake him up. And last week, I did notice on the pod, we accidentally attributed Pedro Grifol to the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah.
And then I think we also might have even attributed Ollie Marmol to the White Sox. We were just getting our dysfunctional AL and NL Central teams mixed up. Grifol's with the White Sox, also not doing great. Marmol's with the Cardinals, also not doing great. It's hard to keep track of these Central teams. They're all just a worse Boston Red Sox, and yet somebody's winning a division. But yeah, if you have those managers, I think you're a little bit more frightened about like threading that needle. And you can see, and actually, I mean, like, I think the White Sox are a perfect example of how quickly stuff can just unravel when the clubhouse isn't right.
Mm-hmm. And while Wander is the most valuable player on this team right now in terms of current and future value, he is not the face of this franchise. Maybe some people see it that way. But I think if you polled 100 baseball fans, non-Rays fans, Randy Arozarena would be the face of the team. That's what they would say. You might even get some votes for Tyler Glasnow.
Maybe Glasnow's probably two. Yeah.
Or, you know, a few for Shane McClanahan. I think the last couple of years, you'd get some votes for G-Man Choi in terms of what people, or Brett Phillips, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of what people think of when they think of the Rays. Now, I think it's clearly Arozarena. And you've got guys like Arozarena and Diaz who are major league veterans now. Like, they've been around the block. They've competed in postseasons. And Wander's on his third season, too. Like, he's not a rookie anymore. But it was, I think, drawing a very clear line in the sand of basically saying, without saying the word suspension, he is suspended for two games from the team. Like, in that first night, he was not in the dugout at all. I shouldn't say, I don't know if he was at the ballpark. Apparently, yesterday, Topkin reported that he was in uniform and in the dugout. So it sounds like he'll be back on track to play again today. I imagine they'll start him.
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope we don't have to see Vidal Brujan start again.
I know. We all get punished thanks to Wander. I made this joke at the Slack, on Twitter, we're going to a week-long vacation at Disney, and then your brother Wander is just acting up, and now the parents have turned the car around, and now we're stuck going to your weird cousin's place and playing with them, and all their toys are sticky, and it's miserable.
So,
and Vidal Brujan, all those toys are sticky, and we just are like, oh, I don't want to play with these toys.
But this was a suspension, and I still think that's shocking, and I still think it's not over yet. Like, I hope we're moving in a positive direction.
Yeah.
But after this will be, or before this will be published, Wander will have played a game again. He will, I'm guessing, have spoken to the media, because it was Tuesday or Wednesday that he declined to speak to the media, and that might have been, again, another contributing factor, because the Rays, they've always had, you know, most of their players have been very open to speaking to reporters, and it's not like we're dealing with the New York media here. Like, we don't have that intense of a beat, right, that's going to, well, except for maybe one who we talked about last week, that's going to go after a guy like Wander, so it's not over yet. Like, we don't know how this is going to end. We can only hope that it's moving in a positive direction, and I have faith that it will. So, speaking of Randy Arozarena,
Andy,
I was at the Trop last night for the first time this season. It was Friday night, which means it was Randy Land night. Dwayne and BA were calling the game from the left field bleachers. And Darby, I don't know if you watched the game. How was that?
I did. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. It's a lot of energy, I think, was there. I think BA is in his element. He's a man of the people. It's a very different thing. I know Dwayne had was delayed on a call because he was looking, and then a guy jumped up in front of him, so then he had to go to his monitor. So, you know, it's for the old professionals, it might be a little challenging when your view is different and you have to kind of check your monitors a bit more. But no, it was a lot of fun. I love how much this team has embraced this, and I love the idea of sending the crew out into the stands and getting that energy. So that was a lot of fun.
I had a blast. There were 16,000 people there, but you know, like in the Trop, if it's more than 15,000, it's going to be loud. It's going to be fun, especially on a Friday night in the summer. The team's playing so well. But Thursday, going back to Thursday, the day that Wander was benched, and then we see McClanahan leave the game early after his fastball velocity dips and him not wanting to come off the mound. And we just think, all right, here we go again, another injury. Your mind immediately goes to the worst case scenario. We saw Yandy Diaz slip and fall and then just not really get up and try to run it out. I mean, he was going to be out either way, but you worry about his injury, and then Cash tries to pull him and Diaz kind of stays out in the field, and then you lose, you blow a lead, and you lose to the worst team in baseball, the Kansas City Royals. And the vibes, and we haven't dealt with many nights like this, with the Rays still having the best record in baseball. But the vibes were terrible, I think, on Thursday, with just the everything accumulating. And so my goal was to go to the game Friday, because I'm in town for the weekend, and just enjoy it, not worry about the score, not worry about who was playing or who wasn't playing. And then obviously the Rays score 11 runs. They record 17 hits. And only one of those was a home run. Jose Siri's 3-run shot early on in the game. Even Vidal Brujan got a hit. Like everybody was contributing. It was a ton of fun. We bought like this. By the way, they've got some great ticket deals going on right now. For all the people that say the tickets are overpriced, I paid $10. It was $14.50 after fees and taxes on the Rays website to get a party deck ticket. And then me and my friends that were there, we just never left the center field porch, which has for a few years now been my favorite place to hang out no matter where I'm sitting. I like to spend at least a couple innings up there. Yesterday, we spent the whole time there, had a great view of the game from center field, lots of great food and drink options up there. And man, it was just fun. Like, they got to see the new Jumbotron. Obviously, they got like the LED lights. And I really do think this year, and the attendance numbers bear this out, they're still, you know, they're up to 26th, I think, in attendance as last time I checked.
I'm going to check that right now.
It's becoming a place to be. And obviously, the winning helps. Like, when you're winning at this level and you've got a ton of fun players. But I think that's what we saw the Tampa Bay Lightning become when they started their sellout streak and really became one of the, you know, best franchises in the NHL. Is it just became like a happening place. Like, it was like, that was the hottest ticket you could get in Tampa, was to go see the Lightning. And the Rays are becoming that. No, they're not going to sell out every night, or, you know, but the attendance numbers are there. The fans are there and are like energized. You know, they're making noise. There were very little Royals fans. And I've heard when they play the Yankees, less and less Yankees fans, more and more Rays fans, which I've always said would happen as the franchise gets older. Like, my dad grew up a Royals fan, and then he raised me as a Rays fan, and he's a Rays fan. And now I'm old enough to like go to games by myself. And so I think you're going to see more and more of that as more kids my age that were raised Rays fans. Anyways, I say all that to say it was a blast. The vibes are back to 100. I had a ton of fun, and I'm hoping they continue win. I'm trying to figure out if I can go today or tomorrow. I don't think I'm going to, but I want to go back because that was a blast. And Darby, I don't know when's the next time you can get down to St. Pete, but you need to because it's a ton of fun.
I know. I'm not sure I'll be able to go this this year, but next Friday they are coming to me.
Yeah,
out in Seattle. So we'll see if the vibes can remain quite fun out here in the cold. I will say this about the Trop. It's definitely on TV looking so much better and so much more fun. And I think one thing that about it that's been really cool this year is a sort of, I don't know, like a test strip for like what a new Trop mm-hmm. would be.
Yeah.
So like if you reduce the attendance, the capacity, smaller, leaner, more standing room, that type of thing, to like a 25K, which seems to be like the nature of a lot of these modern stadiums, like wanting to go smaller, but like more open. You have the potential of getting these. We're seeing, like we saw a 19,000 and a 20,000 against Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Well, that was on what, Tuesday and Wednesday?
Like, yeah, that's... I think Wednesday was the camp day, but hey, counts all the same.
It still counts. But if you can, you increase those things, you can say that like, yeah, this, the location isn't great. It is still, you know, a longer drive, a tougher drive. That's not going to change that. But the reality is, I think a stadium can work there. And we're sort of starting to see it now that there is a vibe, now that there is more marketing push, there's ticket deals, there's like, I do think the work that Sternberg has put in and the team overall towards improving in a fairly dumpy stadium that was never really that well designed for baseball in the first place over the last several years has been quite good. This year, that the marketing, that's been the real push. I don't know who's responsible for like the Randy Land or all these new marketing pushes, but phenomenal job. I mean, I've said it. I think the Randy Land promotion is a top five in all of baseball promotion. It's insanely perfect. I mean, like this is, Rob Manfred should be getting on his knees and thanking whoever did that, because that is how you market players. That's how you market star players. And Randy is the one that sort of marketed himself by having this amazing, I mean, he's had an amazing World Series run. He's had the World Baseball Classic was a superstar making. He has an entire country mm-hmm. that loves him. He could be the president of Mexico when he retires someday. But this guy has become such a fan favorite. He interacts with the fans that they, you know, capitalizing on that and being like, yeah, let's do a promotion that's just about him. That's saying like, let's get, you know, the luchador masks and the awesome shirts and like the drink promotion of it's a home run. And just in general, it's the perfect combination of exactly what you want to see is marketing the players in baseball, but then also the right player who embraces that. Like Randy thrives in fan interaction. Mm-hmm. The man needs it. And so it's a perfect marriage. So it's great. That is just one night, but like I think that energy has like really trickled around and they've done a great job with it. It's a lot more, it definitely I think is a fun atmosphere that for a while maybe the atmosphere wasn't the most fun. It was a better stadium than I think people gave it credit for. Mm-hmm. It, you know, anybody that ranked it below like Oakland's in terms of stadium quality, they've either never been to the Trop or never been to Oakland. The atmosphere in Oakland can be awesome, but like that stadium is always like the last decade plus an absolute dump. Like those fans deserve, the fan energy there deserved much better than that. But the Trop's atmosphere was always better than I think people gave it for. Now it's actually like a very fun, exciting atmosphere. And we're starting to see that. Trevor Plouffe, who's former Ray, former mm-hmm. Twin, now a member of the John Boy Media group. He went down for the 3-game series against the Twins and was mm-hmm. raving about the experience, loved it. I think that's the thing, is get people to the Trop now, and I think they'll be like, wow, this is actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I think over the last six years or so, 2017, 2018 is when we started to see noticeable improvements every year. And there's been like one or two big ones every year. So last year was the sound system. This year, they improved the video boards, but they've got the LED lighting. They've got the colored light shows that go off the dome. Like they, mm-hmm. they really make good use of the roof and everything that you can do with that. You talk about the marketing, the food options are incredible now. Yeah, like so for people that say that the Rays ownership or Stu is just giving up on St. Pete or giving up on the Trop, like that's, you're obviously not going to the Trop. The turf used to look, I was watching some old highlights. It looked so bad. And I was embarrassed as a Rays fan watching it. And now they're replacing the turf almost yearly. Mm-hmm. And it looks really good. Compared to what it did.
even just like looking at it from like the, you know, some highlights from the 2008 season or 2009 or 2010. I was watching it on like YouTube, like a 2010 or 11 game, like a David Price start, and I was just like, ugh.
It looks like carpet, and it's different colors.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it looks like a shag carpet that has been, like, vacuumed poorly. And it's, I'm just like, it's visually, I think when you're in it, when you're watching it every day, it's not as jarring. But, like, now, to, like, watch that, like, I tell, you know, check out some highlights from, like, you know, just, like, 10 years ago. Ugh, it's shocking. It's disturbing how ugly that carpet. And then you look to now, and it's like, wow, this is very clean.
The other thing you before we move on to the pitching staff, you talk about marketing. So last night, you know, now it's every Friday home game. They wear the Devil Rays. You've got your Devil Rays sweater on. Yeah. It's like the Rays, and then the Devil Rays. That's like a brand now. Like, it's not Cena. Oh, I remember when they were the Devil Rays and they wore those ugly uniforms. Like, the Devil Rays is a brand now, and I think the Rays have leaned heavily into more of the purples and the yellows, and they're not just the navy blue and white team, or the, you know, they wear the Columbia blue. Like, the way they've changed their brand strategy, I think, has paid off in a big way, that you see people wear those the black mesh jerseys that you can buy. I think Mitchell and Ness still makes them, like with the Wade Boggs jersey. Like, that's like a fashion thing now. People love wearing Devil. Damian Lillard wore a Devil.
I was about to say, we had a picture of Lillard. I mean, one of the best NBA players out in Portland, from Oakland. Like, but it's a style, fashion.
How many, like, a few years ago, it would be like unthinkable for the Rays to wear anything Devil Rays related, because it was then seen as a reminder of when the team was awful.
The failures. Yeah. The abject failures.
And now they lean into it and they embrace it. And it's, I don't know, it's just so much fun.
It's a great throwback. It's a great throwback to, I think, some bold colors and vibrancy and, you know, and this 90s nostalgia is always very, very big still. But like that, I think the colorfulness of the original Devil Rays and the gradient, it was a bold swing at the time. I loved it at the time. And I think I'm glad it's getting its resurgence. It deserved more. I don't think we're going to get the greens back, because I think that's just mediocre in both look and in performance. But I think the Devil Ray was like that fun, like, wow, this is a crazy bold attempt when baseball is pretty safe. But you had the Devil Rays and you had the Rockies and the Diamondbacks, like, they went for it. And the Marlins at the time, like, I think those were like some, those expansion teams, they went for some big swings. And I love to see now you are seeing the Marlins go back to those original teals, which look,
the Padres are back in brown, just, and gold.
The
brown and
UPS gold colors, yeah. they're back to repping the UPS. I am liking to see these teams kind of embrace, not just in the City Connects jerseys, but like embracing the, like, you can have color, you can have some vibrancy. But yeah, the Devil Rays stuff is fantastic. And I like that you mentioned that. I think it's a part of basically the team, but also the components of the team. You know, Yanni's wearing a ton of pink, I think, because he's about to be a dad. You have the bright yellow. I think the yellow, which is a part of the official uniform, like, that is an element in our color swatch. But I'm loving to see, like, Siri and Yandy and Wander and Randy all, like, be rocking that yellow. We're seeing like that the bold accent colors, I think, really, the embrace of the yellow has been really nice, because it really kind of is this like bold color to break out the monotony of navy blue and white, which
a lot of teams
have navy blue or a shade of dark blue, but I think the light blue, the yellow, I'm liking a little bit more of the fun. And the Devil Ray stuff, I mean, it's one of the best, I think, throwback jerseys you can get.
So the Rays have had, other than the alternates, pretty much the same uniforms for 15 years since they made the switch from the Devil Rays. Quick question, like, two-part question. One, how far away are we from another refresh in the base uniform set? And when that day comes, maybe it's not for another 10 years, I don't know, or longer, how much of those purples and greens and yellows, like how much do the colors change of the team? Because like they've moved further, like they got rid of the road grays. Like they just don't wear those jerseys. They still wear the gray pants, of course. But they only wear the home whites, the navy blues, and then the Columbia blues, which have gotten worse, I feel like. But they still
that is the most I hate. I hate the Columbia blue with the starburst. It looks like a spring training jersey.
Yeah.
I still hate it. I think there's so much potential there, though. I don't want to get rid of necessarily the Columbia blue. I just think we gotta take some swings at that. But yes, continue.
So just basically, what like do you think we could see in the next 10, 15 years a little bit of a rebrand where you start to bring back more of those Devil Rays colors into your main colors?
So if the Trop lease is till 2027, they'll probably have some deciding stuff this year about whether the deal is going to happen in St. Pete. If then, you know, grounds striking happens, you're probably looking at like 2-3 years. So I could see a rebrand for the new stadium in about 4 years.
Yeah. No, and it doesn't have to be crazy.
I could see it. I think the idea would then be, you potentially have similar looks, but with maybe like the blue, light blue gradient. So instead of a purple to green gradient, it's maybe like a blue shade gradient. Yeah. I think the next thing, and I've actually thought about this quite a bit because I do love design, and I think it's an important element, right? If you get your Odell Beckham Jr.'s wearing your jersey, like he did, I think he's friends with Blake Snell, so that was more a bit of that. But like, if you get Odell Beckham Jr. and you know, in football, and you have Damian Lillard, and you have athletes rocking your stuff or celebrities rocking your stuff, that helps for your brand. I think that is important. And I think with the way the Rays have kind of now embraced the Devil Rays, and I think the way larger fandom has embraced the Devil Rays, like very consistently, everybody around the league, like fans that are not a fans of the Rays are like, those are really good looking.
Yeah.
Like those should be their main jerseys. We hear that a lot, right? The Devil Rays should be their main jerseys. I don't think they're going to do that, but I think there is a great opportunity to have like a very modest refresh where they basically take the old, but like make it into the new. So you have a Devil Rays style, like I think gradients, neat. I think you could do some of that colors, but just with the Rays and with the Tampa Bay. But I think at the very least with the new, with, I think they're going to keep there's now rules with the jerseys and stuff where you have a limit and a cap, which is kind of frustrating, but I think the Navy works so well. I think the home whites are clean. I think the big key there is that like Columbia blue, there's room there to make a little bit of a tweak. And I would hope that next year, I mean, so I think a big refresh, probably not until there's the stadium, but a small,
and they've got to launch City Connect still.
That's probably next year. I think they're slated for next year. Yeah. So that'll be nice. There'll be another series. So we'll have City Connects on one weekend day at home. We'll have the Devil Rays on one. And then, but I think the Columbia Blues, I think that's an area that there can be a small tweak that I hope they do next year for the next couple, because maybe even just adding Tampa Bay across it rather than just the Starburst, I think would be good. They don't have that. They don't have a Tampa Bay on their road jerseys, which is, you know, has always been the contentious thing, right? Because it's always been maybe like the 1 foot out the door type of thing. I think if the stadium, you know, if ground starts getting broken, I think that's a great opportunity to say like,
we are Tampa Bay.
Here's New Jersey. Here's the New Jersey that we have. Tampa Bay, and then you get a, I think, an excitement. I think you want, basically, if I'm putting my marketing hat on, I think you want a brand new jersey for when you have an announcement of a new stadium so that people can go, I'm going to buy this jersey.
Well, I wonder if the Rays asked Nike and Major League Baseball if they could wait to do their City Connects until they had a deal in place.
That could be.
Because could you imagine if, like, they unveiled their City Connect and it's all about St. Pete and Tampa and Florida, and then the next day it's like, he's selling the team and they're going to Nashville. Like,
Stu would maybe do that in the same press conference, possibly. And then just a shrug in a 3X button-up shirt. Yeah, here's a City Connects. And, you know, we can throw some Nashville stuff in there, too, probably.
All right, let's finish this episode with some discussion of the pitching staff. So we mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. Shane McClanahan exited his last start earlier this week. And
noticeable dip in velo. That was the big thing. And, like, online you can see, I mean, that's the thing, is now every day, every game, we can all just be like tracking velo. So it's like, well, that's a little shaky. We can like see the pitch FX data and it's like, oh, it's going down. And very scary,
fastball coming at like 93, which is like, he sits like 97, 98. And so immediately Kevin Kelly starts getting warmed up like very quickly. And then three pitches later, he was being pulled.
And in the dugout, those pitch FX we talk about, we are seeing it. They have that.
And they probably have some data that we don't have access to.
Jeremy Ehrlichman, who's the kind of the data guy in the dugout, he is getting that stuff real time. And so, he's like, because you have a Hawkeye as well. So you have basically, like, literally, if your mechanics start to like fall apart, you can see that. And when that happens with something with pitching, if you start to be like, oh, I'm using more shoulder, that's like, you can blow out a rotator cuff. You can, like, that's
right.
Things can happen very quickly, and you want to be very precautious about it. Precautionary about it.
Especially with your ace pitcher, who is, again, probably
leading Cy Young contender.
Yeah. And you've already, you know, gone down Drew Rasmussen and Jeffrey Springs, and you're just bringing Tyler Glasnow back. And even he was dealing with some cramps and worried about him. And the pessimist in me looks at the injuries that the Rays have dealt with and the injuries that they will deal with. And that's every team. Pitchers are going to get hurt. Like, there's no avoiding that. But looking at Tyler Glasnow and Shane McClanahan, who I think we probably feel the Rays need both of them in October. 100%. To have a shot at going deep into the postseason. But what are the odds that they're both healthy? Now, I don't know, right? Like, Shane McClanahan, it was back tightness, you know, Glasnow is probably still dealing with a lot of mechanical things, is what the team and some of his struggles that he's had.
And that's what he was saying.
Really good. Yeah. It's not a issue of health, just trying to get back into the swing of things. We've talked for the last month or so that the biggest need is bullpen help. You can never have enough pitching, no matter whether it's bullpen or starters. If we're going to move higher end prospects over the next month to get pitching, I think I'd rather see one more starter added to this mix, or one more guy that you know you can get 5 or 6 innings out of per start. And to do that, you're going to save your bullpen to where if Glasnow needs a four inning start, we can eat up an extra bullpen inning with guys that got the day off yesterday. Like, I just think one more, because you look at the back end of the rotation and Bradley looks very good, but still very young. He's not going to be at that consistent level that a McClanahan or a Glasnow expects to be at. But then you've got Yonny Chirinos, who has performed very valiantly. Soft.
Very good, yeah.
But I'd love to see that get improved, if possible. And maybe Rasmussen comes back late in the regular season. But there's still a lot of innings to eat up. There's still a lot of innings left in this innings, the jigsaw puzzle, as Kyle Snyder likes to mention. And I'd rather see the Rays, if you're going to trade, I'm not talking necessarily like Curtis Mead, Kyle Manzardo-level prospects, but any of those other prospects that you do think have a path to the big leagues, I would much rather see the Rays use that. It doesn't have to be an elite starter, but just someone that you can come in. It doesn't even have to be someone you expect to pitch or to start in the postseason, right? Like, similar to a Michael Wacha,
I think. Like, I just want someone that can come in, and we've got the best record in baseball. Like, I'm not looking for someone to come in here and dominate. We don't need that type of help. Just to lighten the load for everyone else on this pitching staff. For me right now, if I'm Eric Neander and Pete Bendix, that's my number one target, to figure out the rotation and how we're going to manage these innings for the rest of the regular season.
I think there's two avenues that you look at with this, or two lanes. I agree. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I just don't see the Rays going and trading for relief pitching. That never did. And now I think the Rays bullpen, like, you know, next week we can maybe do a little check-in, but I think at the end of June, June has been a much, much better month.
Jake Diekman has been a huge pickup.
Diekman's been incredible. Y'all laughed. I've been wanting Jake Diekman for like 6 years. And y'all were like, he's trash. Like, he can't even pitch for the White Sox. And I'm like, doesn't matter. Bring in Diekman. Let's get him into the lab. K'd the side yesterday. He's incredible. And he's been great command. Robert Stevenson looks like a legit back end of the rotation guy. Fairbanks is back. Hoche has an extra mile per hour. So I think bullpen-wise, again, there's always going to be some extra bullpen pieces around. So maybe a small trade to kind of, enhance a little bit. But I never liked the idea of like Alexis Diaz or Aldis Chapman, any of these like big name guys.
Yeah.
I still don't. And I think the bullpen has proven that the floor has been raised enough that it's not a huge, huge weakness anymore. So I agree. Starting pitching, you need innings. But I think the two lane thing here is, do you go after a guy that's slotting into your back end, or do you go after, we've talked about this, like the Rasmussen line, somebody that is as good or better than Drew Rasmussen if you're trading for a starting pitcher? I think if you are making a trade for a starting pitcher, I would rather go with that. So a little more expensive, but I want somebody that can be a Drew Rasmussen replacement. And if he's back, then that's great. That just means that just raises the floor, rather than maybe like a Yonny Chirinos replacement.
Fair.
Because I think,
especially if it's a rental team, because then you're just letting him go at the end of the year and he's not probably pitching much this season.
So I think when you look at that, I think you look at like, okay, who's our Yonny Chirinos replacement? And it's like, well, I don't know, if when Elvin Rodriguez comes back, we can like throw him out there, or
right,
or Jacob Lopez or something. Like, you know, I think that's fine. I think that's totally fine. So Rasmussen, that's the level. Tricky, but I do think if I'm going to spend prospect capital, I agree with you, I'd much rather spend it on a pitcher than, or a starting pitcher, or a guy that can eat, you know, 4 or 5 innings, rather than a reliever, rather than a 1 or 2 inning guy. And so the question there, though, becomes, who are you looking for?
Yeah,
because it's tricky. I was looking at the standings, and it is wild how close so many of these, you know, things are. You have like the NL West. Who's in fourth place in the NL West? Oh, it's the Padres. Who's in third? The Dodgers. So like, they're not selling. The Padres are all in. They're not selling. Dodgers are going to be competing for the division. The Giants, who have a bunch of like fun pitchers like Alex Cobb, they've just been on a huge winning streak, so they're not selling. And the Diamondbacks are young and great. You go to the Central, literally everybody has a chance. The Cardinals are the worst, but are the Cardinals picking up the Rays phone anymore? They're like, sorry, I can't hear you over our Randyland promotion. But any cool pitchers you want to trade for us? No? Oh, you hung up. Okay, cool. Anyway. Here's a free ticket to Randyland to come enjoy. We're playing the Texas Rangers, so you can see Aroldis Chap or Adolis Garcia too. But you have the Reds, who are on an 11-game win streak right now. Brewers are in there. Cubs, Pirates. Like, the Cubs have some great guys, but like, I think the thing is, if you're looking down the list everywhere around baseball, who is selling what the Rays would be looking for in terms of pitching? So a couple of names that have come up that might be sold. Lucas Giolito of the Chicago White Sox, who's on the last year of his deal. So he is a free agent. He would be a rental. And then Shane Bieber from Cleveland, because that's sort of the Cleveland style. They're competing, but they do tend to cycle with their pitchers. Do either of those guys interest you?
Yeah, no, I think I'd prefer Bieber. I think you know what you're getting more out of a Shane Bieber, but I'd love to see what, you know, the Rays are able to do with Giolito, because I think the stuff is still there. Like, there is still, he still has the potential to be a, you know, an all-star caliber starter, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I guess that would be the level, but you're going to pay a premium at the deadline.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, if you show your hand and you know, you say we need pitching and you don't know how many other suitors are going to be out there.
Who doesn't want pitching though?
Right. Exactly. That's, and especially with, you know, some of these teams that are right in the mix of the wild card. The only other position, and we can wrap on this, that I think I would want the Rays to look at after starting pitching would be like a veteran infielder that if you suffer an injury to, Brandon Lau, if he's not healthy or he's not very good, or Wander Franco or Isak Paredes, a guy that can come in and raise the floor from Vidal Brujan being the next man up, because the Rays don't seem to believe in Jonathan Aranda at the big league level, or just not right now with what the team needs. But it's clear that Brujan is the worst player on the roster, and not by a little bit. Who was the guy that he wore glasses that he traded for in 2019? Eric Sogard?
Eric Sogard? Yeah.
Maybe someone like the Eric Sogard. I don't, that didn't work out like super well. He didn't play that much.
No. But maybe, it was played similar to Brujan, where it's just like, I don't know if we need you, but we don't need you.
Maybe like a Jace Peterson for Oakland. Mm-hmm. Plays, you know, can play second or third, you know, gets on base, got a 314 OBP, play some pretty good defense. Like, I'm not looking for someone to come in, but someone just an older player that you could add to a contender, and he could provide more than what Brujan does. That's not a knock on Brujan. I mean, it is a knock on him, but it's nothing personal. But just it's not working out, and I hope it works out somewhere else for him, but.
I think that is the interesting element. And I do think this is where the Rays are. I don't see them going after, even though they are like, you know, the best team, right? Like I don't see them going after any big trades.
Yeah.
The trade market will be saturated, but also because of the extra wild cards, I think everybody's going to be very equal in terms of like, we could maybe go, we can do this. Like the Pirates and the Reds probably aren't going to be selling. Mm-hmm. They might do a little buying. They might do a little selling. But like, I think a lot of teams are going to be in a similar role. So I think the Rays are in a good spot to not necessarily go out and trade like something big and get into like a big bidding war. And I don't think they need to. But I like the idea of maybe adding another utility guy who is, you know, fairly cheap that you can add in. Possibly another starter. I think what's so tough is I don't think we'll know who is fully really available or who you're going to be competing against until like a full month from now.
Yeah.
Like it is still right now. Like, I don't know who you can go out and get. That's not just like kind of very fringy. Like Eduardo Escobar got traded to the Angels. Mm-hmm. Like that's a type of trade you can do right now if the Rays wanted to, but I don't think they, you know, with Lau improving and Wander, you know, coming back over the weekend, like you don't need to necessarily replace Brujan, but you, like there are those type of guys like Eduardo Escobar's are available.
I just don't want to go into easily. A postseason series with Brujan, the last guy on the bench. Like he hasn't really shown a lot on the bases. He's not hitting. He's a fine defender, but like, I would rather use that spot. It doesn't have, I threw out Jace Peterson, but maybe it is someone that's a base running specialist, right? Like the way they used Brett Phillips' spot on the roster in the postseason when he was picked. Like, I would rather that be a pinpointed, like that last spot, we're either going to use him as a defensive replacement, a pinch hitter off the bench, or a pinch runner. Like, we know what his role is going in. And Brujan,
Jordan Luplo type.
If he made a postseason roster, he's not going to get in. Like, unless, like,
no.
Like Yandy Diaz is the tying run, and you need to pinch run for someone. Like that's he's just not
his running has also been not good.
Right.
He's not stealing bases.
You're not pinch running for Brandon Lau, obviously not for Wander Franco. You're not pinch running for Taylor Walls. Like, just the role would be so small that if he is on that roster, and like, we've been really blessed with position player injuries. Like, Jose Siri went down. Brandon Lau is on his second IL stint, I think, of the year. And that's it.
That's it. Yeah, no.
Knock on wood.
It's been, you keep that up and you're doing well. Yeah, it's tricky. It's really, really tricky in that regard, because I don't think he is on the roster in the postseason. And right now he's barely on the roster.
You could also see if you needed someone and we'd say we don't make a trade, maybe they do go with an Aranda for a postseason. Maybe they even go with a Kyle Manzardo, right? Where you're like, we just know he can hit. Let's bring him up and see what happens.
Yeah, if it's a heavy righty pitching staff or something, or a heavy lefty, and maybe you bring up Mead at that point. Like, I could see that. I think right now, Aranda's role is if Harold Ramirez or Luke Raley, more specifically, get injured.
Yeah.
Like, if they go on the IL, then Aranda comes up, because they're the, you don't care about their defense, first base DH type of role. I still think Aranda is a decent trade chip. I look at like the Seattle Mariners, for instance, who have, their biggest issue is they have no offense whatsoever. Colton Wong has been a disaster for them. He has not hit. His defense has been not that great. And so they've been using Jose Caballero, who's like a rookie. Maybe they're interested in that, but like, I don't think the pitching wise, like they have like, you know, Chris Flexen, maybe Marco Gonzalez, like neither of those guys is, those are Yonny Chirinos again, but maybe a little worse. So Aranda is in this tough spot where I don't know how much his value is as a trade chip. And he's probably too valuable to just like not use at some point, because he's hitting like 500. he's like a tiny Luis Arraez down there in Durham. But like, the defense is still a struggle. So if he could defend, he'd be up here over Brujan. But I think right now you kind of use that. So I'm excited that I think the Rays, with the bullpen kind of sorting itself out, and hopefully with Shane McClanahan not even missing a start with this back thing, are in a spot where they don't need to make any trades, which is exactly where you want to be going to the deadline. But I do think there's always room to make tweaks around the edges. And I think that's what we should think about, is not so much like adding a Chris Bryant or a Nelson Cruz, but a small piece, Jordan Luplo, a tiny like, oh, let's bring in this reliever here, like Sergio Romo. Like, let's do one of those tiny smaller moves around the edges that can like lift the floor in maybe some areas. And those margins, that's why they pay Pete Bendix and Eric Neander the big bucks. Find those guys.
We'll see as we get closer to the trade deadline. But again, the vibes were down on Thursday, a lot better on Friday. Let's see how they get through this weekend. We will hopefully have more regularly scheduled Raise Your Voice episodes throughout the rest of the summer and into the fall. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys for listening. If you like what we do and you want to catch every episode of Raise Your Voice, make sure to follow or subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. As always, make sure to keep up with all the great Rays coverage on DRaysBay.com. Once again, thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.